Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Monday, August 8th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Fullerton, but it's really not, guys. It is Tuesday, August 9th. If you were listening to yesterday's show, you may have found out that I had some serious audio issues with my mic. So I had a really bad mic issue on my side. Didn't know about it until the guests got here, unfortunately. So we went and recorded the episode with my special guest, Rick Clemens. And I let him do most of the talking because we realized that I wasn't sounding very good at all. He could barely hear my questions. So the show went through live as promised with him doing most of the talking yesterday. I am now re-editing this show. I'm going to put in the beginning again and try to work the transitions a little bit if I can. Re-edit this and replay this so we have a better playback. So thanks so much for your patience. If you did listen to the show yesterday, wow, thank you so much. I'd realized that my audio was really off. I had a mic going really bad, so I went out today and bought a brand new microphone. So we have a shiny new microphone in the house today. Very excited about that. But let's kind of go over what we went over yesterday a little bit. A couple of things going on. I did talk about my weekend yesterday. And as you know, if you follow me on social media, Sunday was the one-year anniversary of my dad's passing away. So it was kind of a rough day for Mom and I. But we did spend it together. We had a great time together, kind of reminiscing about what's been happening the past year and our best thoughts of Dad. And we went out to dinner and went to her happy place, which you know is the casinos. We went there for a little while. So it was a fun day, Sunday, given what it was. So still very sad. Hard to believe it's been an entire year already. But thanks so much for being part of this journey. This journey started because of my dad. I had quit my job, moved back home to take care of him when he was ill, started this podcast, and have just grown to love the interaction with you guys. So thanks so much for listening to me every week. We're up to almost 10,000 listeners a week. So keep sharing it with all of your friends. Make sure they know about the podcast. Share it on your social media. I really do appreciate it. I've been so blessed to have such great guests over the last year, and next year is going to be even better. I'm taking time off this summer, this August actually, and only doing one show a week on Mondays for the Left of Straight Show. I'm taking Tuesdays off, and Wednesdays, on occasion, I'll do a Standing on My Soapbox, which is our weekly current event and rant show where we encourage you to call in. But those won't be as much in August either. They'll come back full speed in September. And then in September, also on Thursdays, we'll still be doing Kevin and my show, the Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. But then I'm taking this time to really get the show ready to go for year two, starting September 1st. So thanks for all your patience as I take a couple of days off here and there throughout the month. But every Monday, we will have a great Left of Straight show for you with some different guests. Today, we are having the amazing Rick Clemens. He is an author, blogger, podcaster. He is the coming out coach, and he does host the Coming Out Lounge, which was nominated for a Best LGBT Podcast Award this year, along with my show, The Left of Straight Show. So I'm so excited to have him on in just a little bit. A couple other things going on. We want to give a big shout out to friend of the show, Paul Richmond. Him and his husband, Dennis, packed up everything, left from Columbus, Ohio, and moved to Monterey, California. And he just arrived yesterday, and so excited for him. If you haven't met Paul, remember Paul. He was on both this show and on the Healing Stigma show with Kevin. Paul is an amazing artist, and just, he's so good. A painter, and he helps with bullying campaigns and does so much great work for the LGBT community. But him and his husband went to Monterey, got into California. I actually lived in Monterey for 2 years, so we had that in common. We were able to talk about some of the places to go and visit. And I think Dennis has relatives there. So excited for them to start the next chapter of their life. So good on you, Paul and Dennis. Also, Cleveland Pride is back on. I'm very excited. As you heard last week's show, I believe last week or the week before, it had to be last week, they had canceled Cleveland Pride. It was set for this Saturday, August 13th. Big deal. It's the 39th year of Cleveland Pride. It's always a huge deal. It was held in George Voinovich Park, which was right along Lake Erie, but they lost that venue this year, so they had to change the venue. But 2 weeks ago, almost to today, we found out that they were canceling. The organization that puts on Cleveland Pride canceled the event with really no other notice except just a statement saying, we're canceling this year's event due to concerns over security. And it just really left a sour taste on people's mouth because nothing was ever said. I mean, they've been taking vendors this entire time. There was a parade every year. They're taking parade applicants. Everything was happening until all of a sudden, 2.5 weeks before the event, boom, it's gone. They're done. So a big hats off to a couple people. First, it was a good friend of the show, Ken Schneck. He hosts the also nominated podcast, This Show Is So Gay, out of Cleveland. He really brought this to everyone's attention. He did a Huffington Post blog post about the cancellation of Cleveland Pride that went viral all over the country. A great work on his part. And he got the word out there. And now the city of Cleveland and the Cleveland Gay and Lesbian Center have put together a Pride Festival for this Saturday, the same date, August 13th. It's going to be a couple hours shorter. It's going to be on the Courthouse Square or the Common Square of downtown Cleveland. And good for them for picking up the ball and rolling with it. They got a show together in, mind you, 2.5 weeks. So, and the best news yet is they've asked Ken to MC the event. So good on him for bringing it to everyone's attention and now being recognized and going to MC the event this Saturday. I can't wait to be there. I'm going to be there with bells on, going to congratulate everybody, and I'm looking forward to go to Cleveland Pride this weekend, August 13th. If you're in the area, I hope you will go check it out just to support this great group. So that's happening this weekend. Then, of course, we have the Olympics going on. I don't know if you guys are into the Olympics or not. The USA is doing phenomenal. Last time I checked, they had 19 medals, the most of any country so far. A lot in swimming. Swimming has been real big. And diving and all sorts of things. Shooting, they've got medals everywhere. So good on the Olympics. I haven't been able to see too much of it, but it's going really well. And then, oh, Terry Ray, our good friend Terry Ray, and Kevin Scott Allen, who was on last week. This was the second to last week in electricity this past weekend. They had the incredible, lovely Lonnie Anderson in as their guest talkback speaker, talking to the audience after the play. It was her birthday this weekend. Of course, Lonnie Anderson is just looking phenomenal. She's in Terry's web series, My Sister Is So Gay. And she was looking fantastic. All the pictures on social media have been great. So big shout out to them. So that's what was happening this past weekend. Of course, we got Pride this weekend, so looking forward to all that. But we're going to do a little rebroadcast here. I'm going to add this to our show and try to make sense of in between when I was introducing Rick. And luckily, he came through loud and clear, so his part will be intact. But thank you very much for letting me clear up the audio here. I appreciate all of your listening. You're listening to the Left of Straight show. We're going to go play a little bit of Damien Escobar Hello that was playing yesterday. We'll be back in just a couple of moments. Thank you. And we are back. Guys, my guest today is an author, a certified life coach, and a fellow podcaster who is also nominated along with this show as one of the best LGBT podcasts this year by PodcastAwards.com. He calls his listeners and those he works with closet busters and encourages them to step out, step up, and step into living their powerful truth. He's helped thousands of people in over 50 countries come out of the closets of their lives to confidently own their own uniqueness. So, Rick, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. Sorry for the audio problems. And go ahead and tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I kind of grew up all over the country. I was born in Colorado, spent a good portion of my life in Northern California. And then we moved to the Southwest area. My dad was a contractor, so he did a lot of construction work. So we kind of moved wherever the building booms were going on. I said I had a very lucky life because I lived in some of the most beautiful places in our country. I grew up in the Napa Valley, spent some time not too far from Aspen, Colorado. So I had a pretty blessed, eclectic life. And it wasn't until... For most people, I think, this is when it starts to happen. It wasn't until I was in my late tween, early tween years, teen years in high school that I started realizing there was just definitely something going on with me that I couldn't put my finger on. Although I had had some early experiences in my own life that kind of lent some pointers to, okay, this is who you are. I couldn't really wrap my head around what was going on as far as dating and stuff like that. I dated a little bit in high school, had a couple of girlfriends, but I wasn't the epitome of the horn dog guy, let's just say that. And I got through high school, had some pretty emotional connections to a couple of my really, really good male friends, which kind of put the pointer signs in the right direction. Got into college, started opening up, feeling even more close to some guys in college. And began to realize this is, you know, this was part of my sexual orientation. Came out to my parents at 19. And in a very loving way, they said, no, you're not. And it was kind of shocking to me because I knew who I was. I knew what I was feeling. But being told, no, you're not, was probably the very first time I began to become somewhat rebellious in my life. But I also was a pretty good kid. I never had done drugs or drinking or any of that sort of stuff, and wasn't like the one that was out, you know, raising hell on the streets at night and all that sort of stuff. So I stepped back into the closet, went through some religious counseling, not ex-gay, but just some counseling around, you know, here's, you know, what the Bible says and so on and so forth. And basically took the step back in, and it was partially shoved back in, and it was partially I opened the door and stepped back in. And I say that because I want to be very fair to not leave the perspective that this was all my parents doing. I was very much aware of what I was doing, even though I was still in a very confused state. And finished out my college years kind of, I guess the best way to describe it would be ignoring any sexual energy, so to speak. There were a couple of instances where I had some sexual experiences, pushed the envelope, had a three-way with a guy and his girlfriend. So I wasn't like a complete prude or virgin by no stretch of the imagination, but I wasn't having the normal, oh, let's be dating girls and all that sort of stuff. It was very much more, I'm just going to get through school. And it wasn't until I got out of school that I started really experimenting and going, okay, what's going on here? But I was so scared of what that looked like. I was afraid of getting caught. I was afraid of, you know, catching diseases and stuff like that. And this was right in the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. So it was anybody's guess who, what was going to go on, you know. And started living my hidden life. I would say it was my late college years and right after I graduated that the hidden life showed up. And then so did my future wife. She showed up at that time as well. And I found it almost habitual, I guess that would probably be the way to put it. that, okay, well, this was
Wow.
what I'm experimenting with, but it was not, it's not going to be part of my life. You know, it's, it, let's move on. Let's do what everybody's saying you're supposed to do. Have a wife, you know, get married, blah, 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 blah. And that's what I did. And, that's kind of where the story began to unfold too, is I was living a dual life from a very young age. I was 24, 25 years old, I think, when we got married, and I was living a dual life, trying to figure myself out, and it set the tone for the next 13 years of my life.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it was scary too. I have to be really honest. It was a scary time, and I didn't see it in the moment. I didn't realize
right.
how much I was putting myself at risk. You know, this wasn't the day and age of apps and everything in your hand and, you know, easy to connect with people. And, you know, we didn't have all this beautiful, beautiful yet, you know, crazy technology we have today. There was a lot of, you know, the web was just beginning to become something. You know, there were a lot of chat rooms that I found myself going into, but I sometimes want to say I almost felt like it was a mental illness for me because I could disconnect. Yeah, I could disconnect from the experience, not a mental illness of I'm gay. That's not what I'm getting at here. It was almost like I felt like there is something wrong with me that I could like be completely disconnected as if none of this was actually happening. And it wasn't until after I came out and got real about it and looked back at it going, yeah, there was it was happening, but this was the way you were coping. You were coping through it. I would go hook up with guys and then come back to my wife. And then I would have sex with her and I wouldn't be connected there. So I really was living a shell of a person, even though that shell from the outside looking in looked completely normal and happy and successful. And which a lot of that was true. A lot of it was exactly what was happening. We had a good life. I was in a good position at work. I was traveling the world, all this stuff. But I was definitely living a dual existence throughout that entire period of my life.
Did you ever think there was maybe a point in your life that you were bisexual at this point, or what did you think about that?
You know, I can't say that I actually sat down with myself and poured myself a glass of wine and said, okay, let's explore this. Are you bisexual or are you gay? I don't think that ever actually happened. And I never thought about it actually until just a few years ago. I was speaking on a stage at a university, and in the Q&A, a student asked me that same exact question. Did you ever question it? And I said, honestly, no. I don't think it ever crossed my mind because I knew that the attraction to men was really, really high, but I also knew that the attraction to men at that time in my life was a very sexual attraction. It wasn't an intimate connection. So I'm like, well, I don't know that I'm really bisexual because I'm having sex with my wife and, you know, there's no problem with the plumbing doing that either, and but there's no problem with the plumbing doing it with a guy. And it wasn't until when I discovered that, oh, wait, there's more to this than just the sex thing. There's the connection. There was the intimacy. I mean, and, you know, now when I look at men, most men, you know, we all have our preferences, but when I look at a man, there's something about not only the sexual attraction, but there's the intimate and the emotional attraction too, that I can go, oh yeah. Now, this doesn't mean I'm not attracted to women. In fact, I probably have more women friends than I do male friends. But when I look at the intimate piece of, oh, how do I connect? How do I emotionally find myself charged? I can actually envision that more with a man than I ever could with a woman. So yeah, the bisexual was kind of like off the table, so to speak.
Wow, that's really fascinating. And then you actually came out for good, I guess, at 38 years old. What was it like for your parents to having to come out a second time? Were they okay with it, or how did that go?
Oh, yeah, they were not happy because and even to this day, we have our challenges, kind of a roller coaster depending on the year and the day. And right now we're in the year and the day we're on the top of the roller coaster going down once again. So, but it wasn't easy because they had, at that point in time, I had pretty much pulled the wool over everybody's eyes, two kids, a wife, a house, great job. All that stuff was, you know, the white picket fence, so to speak, even though my ex-wife and I were very, not at all white picket fence kind of people, but we were, you know, we were doing, living the American dream, so to speak. And so when this happened, the first place my parents went again was, this is against God's will. And that's their stance to this day. They take the stance of that love the sinner, hate the sin, you know, all the typical things that most people will hear when you come from a faith-based, you know, family into this world of being who you are. And so it was difficult. There were times that I was pretty sure I wouldn't have a relationship with them. And then there were times that things would turn. And then now we're in a space where I don't really have a relationship with them right now. It's kind of ironic, actually, that as we're recording this podcast, they're actually in my area. They have seen my youngest daughter, who is out of school for the summer. They've been doing stuff with her, but we haven't had any interaction at all. So we're kind of in another down. Like I said, we're going down on the roller coaster right now into the depths of stuff that I'm not really happy that that's where we are. But at some point, and this is something that I work a lot on with myself and with clients, at some point you just have to kind of let the insanity go and take a stand. And I know for me right now, this stand it's hard. It's also freeing, and as odd as this may sound to some people listening to this, it's actually given me energy to do the things I know I'm meant to do here on the earth, and it's freed me to be so much freer. I mean, just saying the words I'm saying today, I love them. They're my parents. I care about them, but I can no longer do this. I can no longer go through this emotional roller coaster that I get put on, and I'm 53 years old. It's like, I think at 53 years old, I pretty much know who I am, how my life is, what I'm going to be, what I'm going to be doing, and we just can't seem to get to that space. So I've consciously made the decision that for now, I can't have any interaction because it takes too much energy. It puts an emotional toll on me, and I have better things to do with that energy than to endure it at this point.
Wow, I'm so sorry to hear that. But I mean, it really talks about your tale and about what you teach as far as living your own uniqueness and living your own truth. Does that have to do now with your being this life coach? How did the life coaching come about? And what does being a life coach mean to you? And what kind of experience has that brought you?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because this is a pattern I see happen numerous times when I work with people coming out. The thing that you come to work with a coach on oftentimes, whether it be coming out, you want to find your passion, your purpose, or you're in a job that's kind of dead end, whatever that thing is that you come to work with a coach on, oftentimes that's just the igniting event. It isn't actually the thing that's really deep underneath. And even though coming out was part of my journey, what I found was as I made that shift to be authentically and uniquely who I am, other things began to show up. So it was a pretty rough year. I came out of the closet. I got laid off from my job. I was going through a divorce. I didn't have any income coming in. I had a fairly nice golden parachute for my job, but it was the time in our economy that you know, things were starting. I worked for the hotel industry. I was a software director for a big software company, a VP of software in that organization. And there wasn't a lot going on in the hotel industry at that time. Most of the hotels were shaky, wondering if they were even going to keep doors open and all that stuff. And we were only a couple of years prior to 9/11. So, it was kind of a crazy time. I went through about a year and a half of getting laid off, going back to the company I was working for, finally walking out saying, this isn't working either, taking on another job, going, this isn't where I'm supposed to be, and finally just kind of saying, I'll figure this out. And that's what I did. I started working contract consulting, doing marketing and branding stuff for other software companies in the hospitality industry. And in that year, I actually truly began to find myself. Ended up becoming a spin instructor for Crunch Fitness, which was like a huge stretch for most people that knew me. Like, really? We didn't even know you rode a bike. I'm like, well, me either, but I got a gym membership because I had to get this boy body in shape to go attract a man, and started doing spin and all that good stuff. And yeah, I started riding. I became a cyclist. I wasn't working, so I'd get on, hop on, do the job boards in the morning, and then grab my bike. And, you know, depending on whether I had my kids that week or not, I would grab my bike and go hit the PCH here in California and ride 60, 70 miles at a shot. And I got really in shape. And then I also started feeling like something's got to change on the, you know, career front too. And I took a risk on a job that was a .com, right in the midst of .coms not doing very well, but took a risk and watched myself walk into a position that was, position-wise, was very much a little bit of a downward move as far as the position title. But responsibility-wise, it was equal. But money-wise, it was a huge jump down in income. And I thought, this is crazy. Why am I jumping at this? And what I ended up doing was really loving it. Ended up growing, again, in a really beautiful environment and helping bring a company to some pretty decent profitability. And then got laid off again. And that was like, okay, I'm done.
Oh, man.
I am so done with this. And I'm really glad it happened, because it's ironic. You know, you asked the question about becoming a coach. When I first went to work for the software company that was in the hospitality industry, I helped bring in a coach to work with our organization because we were going through a triple merger. So we were a lot of egos in the room trying to figure out, okay, who's staying, who's going, what products are staying. And so I actually brought in a business and executive coach to kind of work with our team. And that was my first exposure. I'm like, oh, wow, I really like what she's doing. I think I could do that. But ironically, I had just got hired by the company. I'm like, well, no, I'm not going to go walk away from this job. And I actually hired her. This is back in 1996. So I actually hired her to help me with some stuff. And so then I got exposed again to coaching between the two jobs. But it was kind of like, okay, well, there's only so much money in the bank. I can't see myself taking money and investing to become a coach. I don't know if I really want to run my own business like that, blah, 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 blah. And then ironically, 6 years later, when I got laid off again, I'm doing consulting and stuff. And most of my clients that were starting to show up were coaches in some form. They were either business coaches, they were coaches who were life coaches writing books. And I started helping them, you know, really do their business. And then the bug kind of came full circle and presented itself just at the right time in my life where I could say, yes, this is what I wanted to do. And I stepped into the work, not really knowing anything other than I needed some tools to help people shift. I was surrounded by a lot of people in my life who were like me, who were late in life, coming out, going through divorces, had kids. Some of them, only a couple of them didn't have kids that were going through the process of coming out. And I realized I was actually quite good at this. And what was missing was like some tools and some protocols. And, you know, there's one thing to give advice. Then there's the other thing to like challenge people to go find their own answers. And for me, that's one of the biggest joys in my life right now, is to help challenge my clients, whether they're coming out in their sexual orientation or they're coming out to leave corporate America, is to help challenge them with tools and questions and activities that help them go access the answer that's already within themselves. And that's how I got started with this coaching. Was I went through a program and literally walked in the first day and they asked the question, so why are you here? What are you interested in coaching? And I literally stood up and said, I'm the coming out coach and I'm going to work with people coming out late in life. And bada bing, bada boom, here we are 7 years later and I'm still going at it very, very strong.
That's awesome. And one of the things I really like is that you are coming out for the LGBT community, but you're also talking about coming out in other things in life, coming out to be your best at work, coming out in a business setting. Talk about how that kind of got merged with it, because I think that's just fascinating.
Well, I think the importance of it is when you can come out. In fact, it's interesting. I was just recording for my podcast. I just interviewed a guy who at 19 years old, or 18 years old, I guess, was in a car wreck and suffered severe brain traumatic injury and was also an alcoholic. And it wasn't until just a few years ago that he finally came out to admit that, number one, that he suffers from brain traumatic injury, number two, that he's a recovering alcoholic. And the thing that happens, no matter what the closet is when you free yourself to step through those closet doors and admit who you are, a couple of things happen. Number one, you experience the freedom. Number two, you start to see what being transparent really looks like. When you can be really transparent and say, this is who I am, there's a beautiful, beautiful part of you that shows up to play differently in the world. And to me, the third and maybe the most important thing is when you can say, this is who you are, no matter what that is, this is where the uniqueness piece, this is where the uniqueness piece really shows up. So as a gay man and a father of two beautiful daughters, I have a unique viewpoint on the world. And I'm not saying I'm the only one who has this unique viewpoint, but I have a unique experience of when I came out, how old my kids were, how it transpired with my family. Each of us has these very unique things in our lives. And so when I started seeing this pattern, because I started having people show up to my coaching practice from other areas of life going, wow, if you can help somebody come out of the closet, maybe you can help me. I'm really stuck here. I'm in a bad relationship, or I'm not in a really fulfilling relationship. I'd like to really explore. And so, of course, I would use the metaphorical closet conversations to go, well, let's talk about who you really are. So when you ask a question, like when somebody first shows up to my work, if they say, yeah, I think I'm gay, the first question I will ask them is, okay, so tell me why you think you're gay. But if I get an entrepreneur walking in the door who's like, I'm in a cubicle hell and I've been at, you know, this job forever, and I really have this itch to go do my own thing, the first question I ask them is, why do you think you're an entrepreneur? Why do you think you want to be a business owner? Or what, are you ready to own that? Because that's when the exploration starts. Say, this is who I am. We empower ourselves to finally admit it. Now, it doesn't mean we're done. That's the beginning of the whole journey is, I'm gay, I'm an entrepreneur, I want to be a stay-at-home parent. In fact, I was just talking to a guy not long ago who's probably going to do some work with me, who he's been the breadwinner, and he's tired, and he really wants to do something more fulfilling. And when I asked him, well, what does that look like? He goes, well, if I was being really honest, I'd love to be a stay-at-home dad and take care of the house and take care of the kids and have time with the kids. And I said, so is that the first time you've really admitted that? And he got really, really quiet. He goes, yeah, that's the first time I've actually said those words out loud. And I said, well, welcome to your closet. You just admitted what the closet door looks like for you. And it's a very powerful moment when we can step into those arenas.
That is so fascinating. So tell me, how do people find you? Do you go out and find your clients, or do people come to you? How does that part work?
Well, it comes from doing shows like this. People will hear. I do a lot of writing for Huffington Post, mostly the queer voices, but I have begun to write some pieces around business and entrepreneurship. For instance, this week I'm headed to an event in Portland that's an entrepreneurial conference. I've got two meetups going on there, and one of them is actually entitled Coming Out of Cubicle Hell. Becoming that entrepreneur and coming out of your entrepreneurial closet. The other one is how to have kick-ass confidence as an entrepreneur. So the more I can take this story, I can take these parallels and I can lay it on to pretty much anywhere that I show up. Obviously, I get a lot of, I say obviously, like everybody should know this, but like most businesses, a lot of the business comes from referrals from clients that you've already worked with. I do a lot of speaking at colleges and universities on the LGBTQ front. But I'm also starting to put proposals out to go speak to, young entrepreneurs or, some of the business stuff. I actually have a couple of contacts who just contacted me about coming and doing one of the entrepreneurial work series that they're doing at a couple of the local universities here in Southern California. And now that I've really gotten solid about how I can make this work, one of my taglines is, how do you make your quirk work? Well, there's a lot of quirks that we all own. And helping someone really own their quirk and make it work is another thing that I talk on a lot. So that one's getting a lot of attention too. Wow, this is about really owning your unique space in the world and being who you are without it having to be the LGBTQ coming out talk. So I keep developing these products and speeches and talks and workshops around that sort of stuff. So for instance, in a few weeks, I'm doing a workshop in the Southern California area called Uniqueness, How to Make Your Quirk Work with Confidence. has nothing to do with LGBTQ. It happens to be at an LGBTQ venue, but we are positioning it for anyone and everyone to come. And we just opened the doors just actually a day ago. And we can see from the registrations already that a lot of people that are showing up are people who are in the entrepreneurial world looking to make their claim their stakes and move on.
That's terrific. I love that. All right, let's go ahead and take another quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk all about your podcast, your book you have out, and all sorts of other good stuff. Let's listen to another track from our good friend Damien Escobar. This is Freedom, most amazing violinist ever. You're listening to the Left of Straight show. We're here today with Rick Clemens, the coming out coach. We'll be back in just a couple of moments. And we are back. That was the amazing again, Damien Escobar. All right, Rick, let's get to it here. Now, you had, I think, a blog before the podcast. The podcast is the Coming Out Lounge. But talk about this. How did all this come about? You had a blog, you had the podcast, you have a book now. Let's start with the podcast, though.
Well, it actually, that started, and I can't tell you exactly when it started because I don't remember, but it was a radio show before it was ever a podcast. And did 26 episodes as a radio show, and then it came time to renegotiate, and I didn't want to pay what they were wanting me to pay, and I was kind of burnt out at that point. There was a lot of shifts going on in my business. I was starting to feel the, okay, I've been coaching a lot of people, I've been writing a lot, and I was at a high point in the business, and I don't want to discount where I was because it was actually quite beautiful. I was featured on Huffington Post. I had been on national TV on the Ricky Lake Show. So a lot of really great stuff had been going on. And this opportunity came along. I bought it off of a girlfriend of mine, enjoyed it. The first time I got behind the microphone, you know, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And got off the recording that day, and I'm like, okay, I know what I'm doing. And, you know, not to sound egotistical, but I really knew what I was doing too. That was the thing. And even my producers at that time on the radio show, and, you know, I had a lot of family and friends and everybody listening, and they're like, you know, I start getting these messages like, oh my God, this is what you're meant to do, Rick. And I really enjoyed it. And then when everything kind of went haywire with the agreement and the contract, I was like, you know, it's okay. I'm totally cool. I'm writing at this point. The book is being written about that time that was all unfolding. I'm good. And one of the things that happens when you're in this self-help arena is everybody's got an opinion about what you should be doing. Oh, you should have a podcast, or you should have a radio show, or you should be writing a book, or you should be writing, you know, yeah, that's great. So who wants to hand me another 24 hours to put in my day? I'm totally for it, but I need like that much more time. Until you start to realize how you can leverage different things. And I started realizing, okay, I can do a show. And when I'm doing a show, then I can write a blog post about what we just talked about on the show. And then I can do a HuffPost article about what we just did. So you kind of learn to start consolidating things really, really quickly. And that's kind of what happened. The podcast went by the wayside. And I was completely okay with that because I knew there was shifts starting to happen with the business of lots of coming out work. I was starting to do a lot of work with gay men who'd already come out of the closet. I became known as the gay man's life coach and was enjoying that ride. So started doing a lot of, here's, you know, self-improvement stuff for gay men. And as would be expected in the coaching world, it's always about, okay, what's the next best thing I can do to grow my business? You can either stay very focused and go deep, you know, go narrow and deep and then go wide, which was basically what was happening. I just didn't see it. I didn't realize that's exactly what I was doing. So I came to the work as the coming out coach, and then suddenly, wow, I'm working with gay men about their stuff, whether it be relationships or careers or, you know, not being passionate about what they're doing. Maybe they're, you know, not dating at all. So there was all the life stuff that was starting to show up. But what I realized was I was just going deeper and deeper about this coming out stuff. And the more I started working with my gay male clientele, I started overlaying, well, you know what? What was your coming out journey like? And then as I worked with them, I discovered, wow, there was a lot of coming out stuff that they hadn't really healed from, or that they were still carrying with them. So I started bringing them out to deal with that stuff. And that's when I discovered, wow, this was helping them move their careers. It was helping them find stuff they were passionate about. There were guys that were like, I'm walking away from, you know, high, high paying job to go do something that really mattered. And that's when everything started to take the turn. And a couple of years ago, I happened to be at a beautiful entrepreneurial camp called the Good Life Project Camp by Jonathan Fields. And Jonathan does the Good Life Project podcast. And he became a mentor, so to speak. I haven't done any real true one-on-one work, but I've done a couple of his group coaching. I shouldn't say coaching programs, more group courses that he talks about entrepreneurship and, you know, your brand and stuff like that. And at camp, 2 years ago, almost three, it would be 3 years ago now, met John Lee Dumas, who is the founder of Entrepreneur on Fire podcast that literally he started it and it caught fire, and it's been a huge, huge, huge success for him. And
Great.
Became a part of his podcast community, learning the ins and outs of podcasting. And I realized I had this gold mine of content because I had 26 episodes. I already had them. And so I started feeding those in. It's going to be 2 years ago in November that I started feeding the Coming Out Lounge podcast with those episodes. By November or by February of the following year, I was already recording brand new episodes. The first one aired February, the first Wednesday in February of 2014. And we've just been on a roll ever since. We are 3 weeks away, I believe, 4 weeks. Yeah. 3 weeks away.
That's amazing.
From our 100th,
congratulations.
Yeah, 100th episode. So I'm really excited and got some really cool guests that are showing up. I just interviewed Hal Sparks from Queer as Folk a couple of weeks ago. Bruce Valanche is the 100th episode guy.
Wow.
Buck Angel, a transgender porn star, he's getting ready to come on. Charlie David from Dawson's Creek. So it's really cool to see the work you do start to get noticed. And it's not, to me, it's not about the ego of who I get to interview. It's that I bring these people into this space where they share themselves, because I have a philosophy that I live by, that each of us will only resonate with those we're meant to resonate with. And I would never want somebody doing work with me if they didn't resonate with me. However, if I can bring somebody onto the podcast that they relate to. So like I had a couple friend of mine come on just a few weeks ago who do relationship coaching, and they're a heterosexual couple, but I know they would do really well working with gay and lesbian couples to help them enhance their sex life and their love life and their intimacy and all that. And so that's not work I necessarily want to do. I can do it and I enjoy it when I'm doing it, but it isn't what I'm saying. Here's who Rick is. Rick is this relationship love coach kind of guy. Now, Rick's the coming out guy who wants to help you get to the space where you can admit, okay, my relationship really sucks and we're not connected. And okay, let's get you out of that closet. Let's get you primed and ready to take the next step. But I may, you know, somebody may work with me for 2 or 3 months on that, and then I'll do a beautiful, loving handoff to, here, go work with, you know, Orner and Matthew, or go work with Bob and Natalie on that, or go work with, you know, Joe on that, who does a lot of, you know, bisexual work, whereas I don't. You know, it's more me helping prime the pump to get people to the right space. So, and that's what I love doing. It's finding the space where it really works for individuals and give them that solid space of loving who they are in their own way, being uniquely who they're meant to be in the world.
Very cool. Now I have a question. What are the biggest things that you come across? Like, to me, I would think that it would be part religion or part family. What are the biggest obstacles you find people have to overcome when trying to come to terms with their sexuality?
I would say almost every time both of them show up, and there is no 50-50. However, I will say this, that it's probably a higher percentage of people that show up with the faith-based stuff being the bigger obstacle, because it emanates and it integrates into the family dynamic. Even when someone shows up where there's a lot of family, you know, strife around homosexuality, 95% of the time, the reason that's showing up has nothing to do with society. It has to do with the faith-based, you know, background that they come from. So it can be, you know, it can be pretty daunting. But I can tell you that in the hundred and, you know, I was having this conversation this morning with somebody. They asked me point blank, how many people do you think you've worked with? And I said, you know, I can't even keep track of right now. I want to say it's probably close to 150, 200 people I've worked with over the last 6 years. Like individually, one-on-one, you know, really
right.
Done the work with them. And I would say that 90% of those people in some way showed up with a faith-based, you know, Samsonite. I guess that's the best way to say it. A whole Samsonite packed with faith-based stuff they had to work through to begin to really accept themselves and love themselves.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really cool for me that I've found in my podcasting is you never really know how many people you're actually touching. I mean, this is internet radio. It goes out to all sorts of countries, and I'll get, every once in a while, I'll get a Facebook or a Twitter message or something from someone in a country I've never even thought of that I'm reaching out and touching. So I'm sure you're reaching out to so many more people you're not even aware of. So that's kind of cool, I think.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that I have a really good analytics team that helps me look at things deeply, and I think last week we actually hit 60. We just hit 60 different countries around the globe that have downloaded this my podcast, The Coming Out Lounge. And that was a big, I mean, I had reached 50. That was the first time I really saw the number. It was about 4 months ago. I saw, oh my gosh, we're in like 50 countries. People have downloaded this. That's freaking amazing. And then I'm like, well, I wonder when we'll reach the next number. Again, not out of an ego space, but it's like, man, if I'm reaching those kind of numbers, what's it going to take to reach the next milestone? And then the next one from there. And I think a lot of it is, as you well know in your own, you know, podcast, it's about content and what you deliver and how you touch the people you touch. And right. Yeah, I'm just like you. I mean, I'm pretty much connected on everywhere there can be connected, from Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and, you know, everything like that, LinkedIn. But I also have used the tactic of being connected on a lot of the gay male apps, purposefully putting, you know, my stuff up there so that people can see, okay, here's a guy who does this work and he's available here too. And I get hit from guys in the Ukraine, in Pakistan, in India. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, so glad I found you on Scruff or Grindr or, you know, wherever it is. And I found your website and I found your, you know, podcast and the stuff that you write about, because many of those places, so India, Pakistan, Ukraine, Russia, some areas of Africa, obviously being out and gay is absolutely completely frowned upon and you can be put to death for these things. So to know that I am having some impact in some way for someone like that, it's just, it's very heartwarming. And it also makes me very sad that, you know, this is the only lifeline sometimes that some of these people will ever get to finding some form of happiness or peace with themselves.
Wow, I would have never thought of that. That's so interesting. Now, what did your husband George think about that, going out in the apps? That's very interesting to me.
Yeah. You know, it's actually been okay. I mean, we have very open communication, I would say, for the most part, except when we don't, like most couples. but you know, it's been insightful. We have an open relationship, so it's not like we don't know what's going on. It's actually drawn us closer together in many, many ways as well. So I think it's one of those things. And then I'm very open about it. One of the things that I decided when I came out was I was not going to hide stuff ever again, to the best of my ability. Now, I will say this. I will caveat that a little bit with, if it's going to hurt somebody, I'm definitely not going to be open about stuff. So if, you know, if your next question to me was, okay, so why did you and your husband decide to have an, I would say that's off limits, you know. But then there's some avenues I would probably open up about that, you know, depending on where it is. You know, I've talked through that in very intimate settings in some of the psychology and, you know, sociology classes that I speak at, but I talk about it in a very contained way, you know, about how you do this, you know. But to me, I lived 36 years of my life in a closet and not saying things and trying to juggle a double life, and it wore me out. It exhausted me. And I'm sorry, I'm 53 years old. I know I'm going to get tired in the next 20 years, and I don't want to be tired right now. I want to be living my life to the fullest. So I choose not to hide things as much. And some people go, wow, you're really transparent. And especially a lot of people who have, you know, read the book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe that you shared what you shared. And I'm like, because somebody else out there needs to hear that there's somebody else just like them doing the same stuff, and you're going to be okay. You're going to be safe. It's okay to face your fears, and at the end of the day, you will be okay. And that's the core of how I live my professional life and a lot of my personal life too, is I want everyone to know you can be who you want to be. You can come out of hiding. You can face your fears. There's a safe space to do this, and you're going to be okay. And I hope that's what I really truly hope that's what I deliver. I feel like that's what I do in my work. That's what I strive for. And even when I'm on, you know, even when I'm on a podcast like this, that's what I'm striving for, is to help people really understand that journey of you don't have to hide. There's a safe container where you can navigate through these things. You can face your fears. But at the end of that day, like I already said, you are going to be okay. You just got to believe right. that you are.
Nice. And that's one of the things that I really like the best about the podcast awards. We had 10 of us nominated for Best LGBT Podcast. I have honestly only heard of two of the other podcasts before, Mott Bombs, Sewers in Paris, and Cocktails and Cream Puffs. So when I was nominated along with you and everyone else, I actually took the time to listen to all the podcasts. And I just think that you have such a unique story and it's so cool. And your book, I haven't got yet, but I love that it's called Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. Tell me about, let's go into the book for the last couple minutes that we have here. Talk to me about where the book came from, if you will.
Well, it really came from my own personal journey. I think every one of us has a book within us, and that sounds very like author speak, I know, because a lot of authors say that. But it's true. I think every person on the planet has a book within them. Whether they ever will write or not, it's a whole other discussion. But I knew it was there. I knew, for me, part of getting it out in the way that I was starting to write for other organizations like HuffPost and YourTango.com and Good Men Project and others, that this was my healing process for myself. And as I started thinking about, well, the book, I don't want to just do another, you know, coming out story autobiography sort of thing. I'm like, well, then don't. You're a coach. So how can you take the two and marry them together? So basically what I did when I laid out the outline was, here's this part of my story. And when I tell this part of the story, then the next chapter, we're going to talk about how you get through that part of that journey. So you brought up, you know, the faith-based stuff. Well, I went through, obviously, my own journey around faith-based stuff, you know, going through the counseling with the pastor and all that sort of stuff. And then in the book, I try to make things light. Some people say I'm too cheeky. Some people, you know, say there's too much of the fun. I'm like, well, everybody's entitled to their opinion. But, you know, when I talk about the pastor, it's like, yeah, mom and dad sent me over to the pastor for counseling, and, you know, that was all well and good. I thought maybe it might be the thing that would open me up and help me figure out if this was really who I was, but unfortunately it didn't work because he was really hot. So all I did was sit there and look at how good looking he was and think about how much I enjoyed getting to spend 1 hour a week with him, you know. But then in the next chapter, what I talk about is coming to terms with, wait, all these years, my journey has been around, this is how you're supposed to be. And I was raised Seventh-day Adventist. So this is how you're supposed to be as a Seventh-day Adventist. This is what you're supposed to believe in. But it wasn't until those moments when I was actually sitting with the pastor, and this is something that just came up in a podcast in the last 2 months, that I really realized, oh my gosh, that's when I first started questioning all of my faith. And I'm still a believer. Okay, I'm going to caveat that a little bit. I'm a believer in a higher power. I'm very much a believer in a higher power. I do not believe that I just, you know, here I am and life is what it is. I believe there's a higher power, whether it's the universe, whether it's God. I just know that I didn't just appear here. But it wasn't until that journey started of me coming out going, oh my gosh, I get to explore this. And so that's what I wanted to do with the book, is give ways for people to explore. In fact, a friend of mine said to me this morning, you have a way with giving people permission, as I've already said, to stop hiding, step into their fears. But he goes, and what you do when they're in that fear place is you give them the navigation. You help them find the navigation to get through these big questions, and you keep navigating them until you see the point where you can say, okay, so now you've got to that answer. Now let's move to the next thing that you want to navigate around and the answer you want to get to. And that's why I wrote the book the way I did. Real story, address the things that came up in that part of the story, next chapter. Real story, address the next chapter of how you get through those pieces. And then, of course, I wanted to acknowledge that it's not just a one-sided journey. I kind of wish I would have spent a little more time on the other side of the closet door stuff about spouses and, you know, their journey. There's a chapter in there, and then there's another chapter that goes through 30 some different ways to really realize there's another side of the closet door.
Right.
But that's why there's always other books to be written, so to speak. So yeah, that's what the book's all about.
That is cool. I definitely have to introduce you to Ilio Cruz. I'm not sure if you know him or not, but he is just got named Executive Director of Faith in America. He actually grew up Seventh-day Adventist, fantastic, an advocate for the bisexual community, does so much great work for the LGBT cause. I got to set you guys up together because I think you guys would do fantastic stuff. He's got to be on your show.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we would. Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely. That would be awesome, yeah. And you know, I want to tell all the stories. That's why, you know, the Coming Out Lounge is quickly becoming, as I've already kind of indicated, it's becoming that, what's the closet? You know, what's your closet? Where are you hiding? And the more I'm starting to do those stories, I think that's why the listenership is going up and we're getting, you know, it's not always going to be always LGBTQ. It's not always going to be the fun and the, you know, let's talk sex, even though that's a big part of the podcast too. I want to make sure it's open to everything. But I think the more we can embrace this, that we've all got these closets, we're all coming out of something, we're all stepping through something, the more we level the playing field and we can accept each other simply and purely as humans.
That's awesome, man. Well, Guy, I really appreciate having you on today, Rick. Please tell my audience how they can get a hold of you. I mean, you do such great work with your book, your speaking. Of course, you have 3 speaking topics. Frankly, my dear, I'm ... Or like we said, you talk about not just LGBT, but also business and everything else. Your unique Making Your Quirk Work talk sounds very fun. And Confidence Without Compromise. Where can we get a hold of you, Rick?
They can find me at Rick Clemons on Twitter. They can find me at the official Rick Clemons on Instagram. And I believe the Facebook page is the same thing, the official Rick Clemons. Pretty much you can kind of Google it, and I'm going to show up somewhere in your nightmares. So you can't get away from it. I'm pretty much out there. So I feel very blessed because I didn't make all that happen. I mean, I guess I did in a way because I'm the guy who's been delivering the content. But it's everyone who has interacted and done social media and interviewed me. Those are the people, and the people who come and do the work with me, those are the people who have helped me become who I am and able to do this beautiful work of being of service in the way that I get to be in the world. And I give thanks every day for that.
Well, Rick, it's been such a pleasure having you on. Thanks again. I hope all my listeners will go check out your podcast. Again, that's the Coming Out Lounge with your coming out coach, Rick Clemons. Look for the book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay, and book him on your next speaking event. So excited to have him on the show. Thanks so much, Rick. Stay on the line for me. We're going to play one more song by Damian Escobar, my favorite violinist ever. This is Awaken. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show. We'll be back to wrap things up in just 1 minute. And we are back again. That was Damian Escobar. Thanks so much, Damian, for being our music entertainment today. And a big thanks again to Rick Clemens, a coming out coach. Guys, thank you so much for listening in today. And if you listened in yesterday when the podcast was live, I'm sorry for all the audio issues. Hopefully we cleared everything up today with my brand new mic and doing a little bit of voiceover work here for the podcast. I'm going to replay the podcast later this evening and delete the others so it'll be on your apps and everything. So thanks again for listening to the Leftist Straight Show. If you have not downloaded the app yet, it's in your Google Play Store for your Androids or your Apple App Store for your iPhone. Search for Left of Straight Radio and you will find the app. It's absolutely free. You will never miss an episode of any Left of Straight show, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, and Standing on My Soapbox. Again, we're having a little light month this month as I get ready to launch second year of Left of Straight Radio in September. Thanks for coming along for the ride. If you're not following me on social media, it's at Left of Straight on Twitter and Instagram. The Left of Straight Show on Facebook, and Scott Fullerton if you want to friend me personally on Facebook. Thanks again for listening. You guys have a great time, and we will see you next week. Enjoy the rest of your week.